remembering the late Balls Mahoney. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast on Friday, April the 15th, 2016. I'm Bruce Mitchell, Senior Torch Columnist, and as usual, this is the PW Torch Livecast. And we'll be joined momentarily or at some point by our friend and co-host Travis Bryant of the East Coast Cast Audio Show. This week was the second week of Shane McMahon running Monday Night Raw, and this week they gave him something to do, which I thought was pretty interesting and actually a better deal. Oh, I should say that if you want to participate in the show, don't forget to click that one as you come into the show. And Travis Bryant, how are you doing?
What's happening, Bruce? Livecast audience, what up?
Now, do I need to explain this thing about this comic book? This is not the fix, the acclaimed, attention-grabbing PW Torch audio show.
You can just say,
Todd Martin.
You can just say best audio on the Torch. Everybody will go,
attention-grabbing, big-footing show with Todd Martin and guest host, not guest host, but co-host, editor-publisher Wade Keller. That's not that. Even those people seem to like this show. It's really aggravating and annoying, but I mean, you know, they do. This is a comic book that I just thought was tremendous, and I recommended it to you. And instead of, like, you know, thanks for the nice recommendation, I get a lot of crap about Todd Martin. So anyway, I saw you bought the book today. So cool.
Did
you read it?
Yeah, I read it right there in the shop.
What'd you think?
It was great. Like, I can't wait till 2 comes out. So
yeah,
great recommendation. And yeah, and it's my first foray into a comic where nobody's, like, you know, shooting lasers out the hands or anything. Flying around.
Yeah, it's a crime comic. I mean, but storytelling's just tremendous. And then just, I mean, for one book, I mean, it had more twists and turns.
It was 36 pages, not one advertisement in sight, Bruce.
Yeah,
I was astonished. It was just this thick, dense book with not a ad for even an image, though. It was yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's yeah, the guys that do that book, I mean, they just know what they're doing.
Because then I read Spider-Woman one next, and it was like, there was ad, double page ad. Like, you open up, you're looking at both pages, and it's just like, hey, buy this, hey, look at this.
Right, yeah, that's kind of annoying when they're as small as they are, as expensive as they can be, so, yeah, it can be, but yeah, the fix book was really good. The book, not
tremendous.
The audio. I'm not saying anything bad about the audio, even though I'm sick of hearing about how good it is. I mean, and it's for PW Torch VIP listeners. Every week goes on Wednesday, and I should say that sure, what exactly Wade and I will be doing 2 hours of Bruce Mitchell audio show at some point. We're going to do it at some point, but I'm not sure where he is, and I've got a schedule this weekend too, so we've got to figure it out. But we never miss, so we'll hit it. We'll get
if,
it.
If anybody should have a bone to pick with Todd Martin and the fix, it's Travis Bryant in the East Coast Cast, who goes up Wednesday night, Thursday morning, and it was like, now I got this, like, huge, instantly popular show that when people wake up Thursday morning and, well,
yeah, you see what I'm talking,
like,
about? See, now you're starting to understand how I feel.
He's horning in on my time of the week, not just in general being on the show. Like, specifically, that's my day. Thursday morning, that's 4.5 hours of East Coast Cash you're supposed to dedicate your life to.
I mean, you know, do you want to be the spouse that's been around forever and ever, or do you want to be the shiny new blonde that moves into the neighborhood?
Probably,
and, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Probably.
Even though the spouse has been doing a dependable job for consistently dependable job, maybe, you know, not taking care of the, but you know what I'm saying. I think you understand my frustration here. It's better to.
You should probably ask me one of your four questions before, because we could just, you know, probably go like this for a bit.
Yeah. What did you think of Raw for the second week without the Authority? I thought they gave, I liked what they did with Shane McMahon. I thought that you had an even-handed commissioner, general manager,
Yeah.
whatever he was, and that actually was the one I liked a lot was the Kevin Owens stuff. Kevin Owens says for the second week he's going to beat up Sami
He
Zayn.
tipped his hand.
Huh?
He tipped his hand.
He
tipped
his hand.
His hand, and Shane jumped all over it.
Yeah, it's like
if he'd have kept his mouth shut, he could have, you know, beat up Zayn later, cost him a match or whatever he was going to do. But he tipped his hand, and Shane, like a smart leader, said, "Oh no! Thanks for that giveaway.
Yeah,
get out of here."
Do you think that bigfooted Kevin Owens, or was that within the realm of what
no.
should be going on? I agree.
No, he's a heel, and he was doing his dastardly thing. He just said it out loud like a dummy, but that doesn't. That's just, you know, he's a heel, and he wants to brag. It cost him that time.
Yeah, and also it's just if you're going to, you know, be the. It's not even if he's a heel. If the babyface says, "I'm going to jump in the match and beat him up," it's like kick him out of the arena.
Yeah,
it's like make a logical, rational decision based on what you just heard, and stick to it, and don't get at least this week outsmarted. Now, the next week, the heel can take it to another level and do something. And,
right, I was going to say, Bruce, it just adds to the story because now Owens has to be slick about his scumbag tactics.
Right.
You know, like, okay, he's on to me now. I got to, keep it moving and whatever. So it's just something like to think about, like, okay, well, what Owens going to do next week? How far is he willing to go?
Yeah, I agree. What'd you make of Dr. Phil on Raw?
I thought he was great, and I thought the crap he was getting was completely unfounded.
Yeah, this is what I liked about
like,
it.
Like the first thing he said, his first on-screen thing with Flair and Charlotte was great. I mean, he was all in, number one.
Yeah.
It was like an episode of Dr. Phil, but in a way where it made sense as far as the wrestling kayfabe storyline. And the fact that he said cheek 12 times or however many times he said it, won me over. He could have said anything after that, for real. But I just really enjoyed it, and it established Charlotte's and Flair's relationship as clear as it's ever been.
Yeah, I think so too. I liked the cheat part. I really did. I thought that saying, because that's what a heel is. The heel, she's cheating, and you're either the type of heel that has to cheat because you're not good enough, or you're the insecure, talented heel who doesn't have to cheat, but you cheat anyway. And her father's leading her down the wrong path. And the thing about cheating is, if you cheat too much, when the chips are down, then you can't build. Then you can't come back with guts. You can't come back with that moment where cheating won't work and come through. I mean, that's cheaters never prosper. I mean, that's that old saying, and that's kind of the story of professional wrestling. And I liked that they did that. I liked that they keep establishing that she's a heel, that that her father is, you know, her father is someone that's not helping her in the long run, but hurting her because she's learning these bad habits when she's really going to need to do something. I will say this, though, as not exactly aficionado of the dusty finish, but someone who saw it many, many times back in the 1980s right in front of my face, I thought that the finish of that match was not – it was a dusty finish, but they didn't do it right. I mean, the key to it is Charlotte did it right, Natalya did it right, because they reacted – They reacted to Charlotte tapping out like, you know, she reacted like she had lost and she was devastated, the women's title, and Natalya acted like she'd won it. But you need to set it up where for at least 30 seconds that Lillian Garcia is saying winner and new WWE women's champion,
right,
Natalya, instead of, you know, disqualified right off the bat. You need to you have to have that moment of the triumph and then rip it away by some technicality for that to work. And I'm okay with a dusty finish as long as I don't see it but once every 5 years. And they just kind of messed up doing that. I thought the match was good, and I thought that Natalya needed to do something to, you know, she needed to beat Charlotte in some way to make this, to keep this going, and so that her and Charlotte can work together while Sasha Banks, you know, is out there ready to chase Charlotte. So but I thought that was fairly fairly interesting. What was, you're a Philadelphia guy. What was your reaction to the passing of Balls Mahoney?
It was like, oh, well, that's
sadly.
Not surprising.
Yeah, sadly, I agree.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
I think it puts, we talked about over the years the documentary, Barbed Wire City, which Wade Keller, Jason Powell, and I, and a host of folks from pro wrestling
we
journalism.
We sat in that ECW arena, and had to, with 200-300 other people, maybe not that many, but 100 other people, and
100.
Reacting to that emotionally and in the moment.
Yeah.
That was
John Philip Pavich. It took him 13
years later.
And I thought, and I'm not surprised this ended up this way. It's sort of to me the coda to that documentary, but it's a good documentary about ECW, independently produced by John Philip Pavich. And I thought the spine of the documentary was seeing Axel Rotten and Balls Mahoney, young, fresh-faced in ECW, halfway through their career there, and then several years after the demise of ECW, and the the love that they had for ECW and that celebrity that they got from it, but also just the devastating toll that style and that lifestyle took on them. So I'm saddened by it, but Balls Mahoney, I mean, if you'd seen him in the last several years, both those guys, and the fact that they passed away at the same age, they were tag team and lived by taking as much physical abuse, particularly from chair shots, as anybody could, and just it's sad but not shocking, and that's even sadder, I think. So 646-721-9828, 646-721-9828. You ready to take some phone calls?
Yeah, let's talk to some people.
Let's do it. So I said that, and then just for a second, I'm not ready. So, but let's start with one of our faithful callers, Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to
Friday. How y'all doing today? I'm all right. Happy Friday, I guess. How y'all doing today, Trav and Bruce?
So, man.
Okay. Well, I just got one quick question. Since it looked like they're not going to put Doc and Carl into the tag team tournament after watching SmackDown Thursday, what do you think they're going with them, and do you think this might lead to a hinting that they're going to turn AJ heel?
Yeah, everyone's speculating about that. Travis, you want to take your part of the speculation before I take mine?
Well, I didn't see SmackDown, or I saw very little of SmackDown, and it didn't involve those two guys. I think I saw whatever. The Ascension versus Enzo and Cass. That was all I saw. So I don't really know. But we speculated a little bit Wednesday. I'm just not sure. I'm not familiar enough with those guys to really give a good, credible kind of a generic, oh, well, this could happen, and AJ, a lot could happen. I'm just along for the ride as far as those two are concerned.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be speculation. There's going to be, is it that they go with AJ Styles and AJ Styles turns into a heel, and there are people that think AJ Styles might make a better heel than babyface. I'm not sure about that. I think right now, I'd like to see him do better with promos and be pushed a little stronger. I still, for the life of me, can't figure out why Chris Jericho won the feud at WrestleMania. That just boggles my mind. But unless AJ Styles is going to beat Roman Reigns and then Jericho has the first, gets the first crack at the new champion. And I can't imagine that. I don't think Roman Reigns is going to lose that quickly, and particularly to AJ Styles. Yeah. So I think a lot of folks are looking at, a lot of folks are looking at, where the Balor Club comes together. And I'm not sure about any of this. And, is Finn Balor against AJ Styles? Are they together? Is the whole the whole club together. And I don't know that they're there. I like that they're not in the tournament, though. I mean, I think that that gives some intrigue. Not that they just came in, got into the tournament. There's no reason for Anderson and Gallus to be in that tournament unless they're going to win it. It would just weaken them. It'd just make them look like another mid-card team. So, I'm in some ways, I'm kind of like Travis in that I'm ready to go for the ride, but I don't have a lot of trust that this is going to be that these guys are going to be a top act or part of a top act or part of a top clique. I don't know. I mean, we'll see it. I liked how they were dressed. I liked that they just looked like two badasses, and they weren't they didn't seem to be associated with just being a WWE superstar. And you know, I don't know that we're going to get a reason why they beat up the Usos, except they needed to beat up somebody, and they wanted to beat up somebody that's fairly popular. I don't know that I don't know there's any more to it than that, but we'll see as things play out. I'm just it's early.
Yeah, some of the speculation that I think we went into on Wednesday was that it could be because those guys are Roman Reigns' cousin, and AJ's taking on Roman at the pay per view. And, you know, it's foreshadowing the AJ.
That's a good point. I should have said that.
I mean, not really turn if that actually happened, because it would be a huge pop, and no one would be upset, not no one, but very few people would be upset that Roman Reigns lost.
Right.
So, but again, like you said earlier, that's at least like that, with AJ winning the title, that's not what it.
Yeah, that's true. Darrell, you have anything else?
The other reason why I said that is because I feel like since they acknowledged the booze kind of sort of with Roman, that and they have let him use a semi cool line, I guess, in some people's eyes, that they're just trying to make him seem a little more edgier so he can still be a babyface. And not do a full turn, and it will just be. And I think they don't want to feed him all the faces and build more heat on him. Then it just might be good if you have AJ turn heel, just because you want to have some big faction for him to go against. This, I guess, they turn it Bray babyface, and now that he's hurt.
We didn't even talk about that very much. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of moving pieces in this, and I don't know. I'm giving a good answer here as far as like. Speculating about the future, but we'll see. And you know, if they turned AJ with this club, he would be they'd be a cool heel deal. They get a lot of cheers. I mean, well, you know, and so and particularly with Finn Balor involved. So it's just where everything lays out. And I'm kind of glad that you know they debuted several acts the week before, and they debuted this act. You know, don't tell everything yet, and just kind of get it there. So I'm willing to I'm not sure why, but I'm willing to wait to see where all this shakes out. So appreciate the call, Darrell. Let's go to our friend Scott from New Jersey. Scott, welcome to Friday.
Happy Friday, Bruce. Happy Friday, Travis. How are you guys?
What's up, man?
Guys, I really wanted your perspective. And Bruce, before I start, your part one last week, the Bruce Mitchell audio, your retrospective about Blackjack Mulligan was unbelievable. What a great listen it was. You know, that's worth going VIP just for that. Great
well,
job.
I, you know, I appreciate that. I kind of said that, I guess Travis and I talked a little bit about Blackjack, but you know, everybody has their touchstone wrestlers who got them into this, who got them into being a fan like this. And for me, Blackjack Mulligan's one of the major ones. And he was so unique in that, I kind of talked about a lot of things I learned about wrestling from watching him early on. And some of them were positives and some of them were negatives, but he was, you know, one of the great talkers. And I enjoyed him. And so it was kind of cool to be able to like sit back and go through a lot of Blackjack Mulligan stuff. And his career touched everybody from Hulk Hogan to particularly Ric Flair, and you know, just a lot. If you don't know Blackjack Mulligan's career, you know a lot of the people that he worked with, because he wasn't just a WWE Hall of Famer. He was instrumental in a lot of the careers of many of the more famous WWE Hall of Famers.
Guys, but yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, I think it was kind of maybe a tribute to Blackjack with how great a role Bray played in Monday's Raw. I thought that was great. And Bruce, I was thinking about you when they played his intro, where they did give him the moment of silence before the show started. I thought that was cool too.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Yeah, guys, it's kind of amazing to look at Bray Wyatt. I mean, I'm old in the sense of, I don't think it's the only one like this, but definitely the major one where not only have I seen the father in the prom, but now I've seen the grandfather in the prom, the father in the prom, and the grandson. You know, it's going to reach his prom very soon, you would think. So it's you know, in main event wrestling, that's quite the tribute to that family in certain ways.
So, but guys, I want to know what your feelings are on this. I thought one thing that seems to me, I'm hoping, is that Triple H is having more of an influence on Raw. And I have three examples to cite. The three things I thought with the like last couple of weeks, we know what you said, Bruce. I was so encouraged by the fact that Kevin Owens was in the first segment. I thought that was great, and I think that shows that hopefully they're going to give Kevin Owens his due for what he's done. What do you guys think about that?
Travis?
I don't think that should be some kind of given.
I mean,
what, in his career in 8 years and 10 years, they'll give him his due? Yeah.
Well, I will say that, you know, clearly they're giving matches. They're matching up wrestlers for Raw in good wrestling matches right now, or last couple of weeks, that ardent fans would want to see. And then they're cutting, you know, they cut down the 20-minute first segment of talking, and I think that was good. But I mean, if you're going to do that, I think they know that Kevin Owens, I think they're looking at him like, okay, this guy can give us good action that people will get into. And you know, you have Cesaro there too, and you can beat him in a match like that and not hurt him at all. And so that, you know, so that was, there was two or three matches that I thought, this is more like NXT and giving the fans that are very much into wrestling wrestling. So that was, we'll see how that goes. I think it's also interesting that it's Shane McMahon who is giving us these matchups. I think it's very interesting as far as the storyline goes. So it's almost like someone's getting his gimmick stolen. So that's, you know, we'll see as that rolls on.
Well, that's the other thing, guys. What do you think about the influx of all these tag teams? You know, you have a lot of tag teams all of a sudden just popping up. And I think that, you know, I know NXT does a great job with tag team wrestling, tag team action. And, you know, this tournament, I agree, the matchups were terrible, I think, guys, in the first round. But, I think there's some intrigue. And with Gallows and Anderson in, I think there's a lot that could happen, you know?
Travis?
Yeah, I just get the feeling that they're, you know, placeholder type. I don't think there's any. I need to see this more for more than 2 weeks. Like, okay, you got some call ups and you got some decent matches in the last 2 weeks. Like, all right, well, great, but you know, some consistency. We're still talking. If it's October or if it's August, you know, in the lead up to SummerSlam and take over Brooklyn, and it's still like at this level of, you know, wow, then all right. But until then, I'm not going to get excited or think that it's some kind of change. Like, you know, Sam Cooke is in the building, the change going to come. Like, no, that's
Sam Cooke, like, man. That's awesome, Sam Cooke. Way to go.
It's the night after WrestleMania. It's the week after. It's 8 days after WrestleMania. Like, let's see where we are the night after Payback. And if everybody's still, not to be like some kind of downer or anything, but, you know, but the specific question with the tag team, I think it's just a placeholder thing because they had their eye on, like, Cass or something. And maybe Gallows and what's his face, Anderson. They have aspirations. You know, they're looking at them like they're going to strap a rocket to them or anything.
Yeah,
we get some good action, some decent action out of it.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think that. I think too, if you're going to do one thing, you're going to do a tournament. You don't want your best. you don't want all of your best matchups in the first round. You want to kind of let people anticipate and come on. But one thing we haven't seen after WrestleMania, there's usually NXT and WWE roster cuts. And if you're bringing in these tag teams, you're bringing in these new acts, that means some other acts are going to are going to fall by the wayside, and you would think at least. And you know, it looks like Miz and Maurice got they certainly are back in, Intercontinental Champion and back in the mix with everything. So
I thought that was so lame, their stuff. Like, I thought it was a terrible follow up to a nice return. Like, oh wow, led to something important and winning the IC title. But the follow up with the M&Ms and the berating the guy and the cucumber slices, it was just so on the nose and so obvious and so easy.
Yeah,
How about in 2 months you want to do this? Well, how about at least the first couple of weeks, first couple of months out, you guys get creative with this relationship and where you can go with that kind of character and attitude, those kind of characters and attitudes.
Yeah.
So it was lazy and so easy. So easy.
Yeah.
God, and then blue M&Ms in the contract. And it's like Freebird. We're talking about that before WrestleMania. It's that. Or what that was in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, having remembered the origin of the M&M story, which was that Van Halen, David Lee Roth, had put it in the contract writers because he wanted to see whether people were reading the contracts to give them the things that they were looking for. And then it became this joke all the time. And I don't know, maybe it's gone away and now it's time to bring it back. But for me, I just thought, if you're, Hollywood, Hollywood snobbery or Z-list talent acting like they're A-list, that is it, your phrase was exactly right. On the nose, it's too on the nose, it's too cliched, it's the first joke you would think of, and I don't know if that makes it very much of a good joke, but we can go with that. Scott, what else you got for us?
Last thing, guys, what you were saying too is I just want to know what you think the direction they're going to go with the East Authority figure with Shane. I know it's a burning question, but it's been nice and it has been refreshing.
Yeah.
It's been refreshing, and I just think that you could really travel. You were just saying where everyone stands going into SummerSlam. We know what we're saying, but potentially with the roster, I think they could have. I think that business could get hot. They got some things that can make business look good. I really think they have some really interesting things that could come up. And, I think the speculation you guys were saying about, with them attacking the Usos because of Roman Reigns, that could lead to things. And I think there's some really intriguing storylines that could come out of all this. And let's hope we're saying the same thing in a couple of weeks. But I do think the next pay-per-view looks good. I think the matchups all, have potential to be pretty good, guys.
Yeah,
that's for my last thing. I'll be listening, hear what you guys say, and thanks for everything, guys. I appreciate it.
Appreciate the call, Scott.
Yep.
Yeah. As far as Shane McMahon, Travis, do you think it matters that there's not really an explanation? I mean, this goofy thing of Shane McMahon got what he wanted and lost the match to The Undertaker. He lost the big stipulation match. He turns right around. I mean, I think that does damage to their stipulations. I really do. I mean, more damage, but...
Yeah.
Does it matter that that Shane McMahon's out there doing what he's doing, and the only explanation is, he got such a great response on social media that we'll give the son that you have kicked out of the family that everybody hates in the family, we'll give him control of the most valuable thing in the company because social media. Does it matter that that's really flimsy, or do they need to do something?
Okay. It's really flimsy.
Yeah.
And the first week or the night after Mania was Vince. It's like, oh, okay. All right, Vince is crazy. That's an excuse for everything. But what was the excuse this week? Like, social media? Really? Now you're going to pay attention to social media?
Well, what I liked about that was they figured they were going to get the big WrestleMania ratings boost, and they could give that credit to Shane. And then it really didn't happen, so they had to scramble and figure out something else. So, you know, clearly they were keeping Shane around, and he's going on the European tour because of Wyatt getting hurt and Undertaker very much limiting what he's doing. And I think there was another one too, but anyway, you know, that's clearly they're trying to get Shane McMahon over. I think that's pretty interesting in some ways, and I'm happy for. I think he plays the role. I think this week they gave him something to do this week, and I think that was he played the role pretty well. And at least if there's, and like I said, I don't think of it as a babyface commissioner. I think of it as, or a babyface general manager. I think of it as when it's a babyface one, it's one that makes fair rulings and does things in a common sense way. And gives, you know, and is actively a character that's actively trying to do things that are fair and give fans matchups that they want. And that's, he played it pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, no, Shane was good in his role. How they got there for the second week was not good.
Yeah, it just something, you know. I
think, and what are they going to say this one, week or this Monday?
I mean, talk about, I think, you know, the main the event that Undertaker versus Shane McMahon in Hell in the Cell is the event that like drove the business at WrestleMania, and clearly even worse than, even more than normal for WWE, and definitely even more than normal for a match that important at WrestleMania. It was made up on the fly. It was just, okay, this is a match. I'm not sure why Undertaker would be involved in this. Not sure this, and you know. And now we want Shane to be on the show anyway. So we'll just do this, and it, you know, it falls apart pretty quickly. But I don't know that there is an explanation. I think they're stuck. I don't know there is an explanation that you can retroactively use, particularly since they had Vince McMahon kill the lockbox. I would, you know, maybe the lockbox would have worked. Still would have been stupid, I guess. So, let's roll on to 702. 702, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hi, this is Kyle from actually Portland, Oregon. I moved.
You moved? Did you let Travis know that you moved?
Yeah, well, I was born and raised in Vegas.
Yeah.
Well, no, you're saying he moved from Vegas.
He moved from Vegas, yeah.
Vegas to Portland.
Oh.
Moved from the glitz and glamour and the sin and debauchery to Portlandia.
Yeah. Well, my question is on Seth Rollins. I was wondering what was his plan going from November to WrestleMania? If he was going to, you know, keep the belt, or was he going to do that feud with Triple H? And that's all I got, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning it was that he was going to lose the title to Roman Reigns, that he was going to keep it the whole year. The plan was for him to keep it the whole year, you know, survive with the title, and then put over Roman Reigns strong at the end of the year. Before he got injured.
At the end of the year being WrestleMania.
Yeah, before he got injured, I think the plan became Roman Reigns was going to beat him, and he was going to have the match with Triple H and turn babyface at WrestleMania. And then, obviously, but I don't know that any of that got, I don't know that second part got set in stone, but they were certainly moving toward that. And then, you know, then Roman Reigns would defend against someone else at WrestleMania. So I think that, you know, but yeah, I think that that was certainly in the wind. I mean, certainly there to do. Travis?
I have to say, they probably didn't know for sure, locked in stone or etched in stone what he was going to do. It probably was fluid.
Yeah, yeah. I think his return is really interesting, though. I mean, that's one. I think that's a return that's going to have some impact. I mean, if anything, it can have any impact on ratings right now. But I think that, and it just seems to me pretty clearly. But, I mean, you know, he comes back right now, the Authority's not around. It's like he can't come back and you know, turn against them or even help them because they're not around. So where does he fit in? And I think, you know, when he comes back, he's going to get that first time out. He's going to get a big, you know, hero's reaction, and just the psychology of him coming back and being as good as he is. So even if he's trying to play heel, That's I think that's a problem, but it's a good problem for them to have. So Seth Rollins, I think that I would have, if I was going to bet, if he'd, you know, there's no way to know how to win this bet, but if I was going to bet on what would have happened if he'd stayed healthy, if his leg hadn't given out on him, I think he would have ended up with the title all the way through, and Reigns would have beat him at WrestleMania, and people would have reacted very much, very similarly to how they reacted when Reigns beat Triple H. So what would
Triple H have been doing? Would he have been in the match?
That's a good question. Yeah, maybe, but he wouldn't have been with Brock Lesnar, and he wouldn't have been. Of course, maybe they'd have done with Brock Lesnar. I think he would. I feel sure that he would have been in a match because they needed as many hands on deck as they could get, and he's one that they can get, you know, clearly. So I don't know exactly who he would have wrestled. That's a good question.
Yeah, that one's a little harder.
Yeah. So but I think he would have. I think he would have been. You know, there was a lot of things in play back then, like Rock having a real match at WrestleMania was in play, and you know, and where all that fit. And, you know, there was the speculation, too. No one knew that Ronda Rousey was going to get beat, and it was going to mess with her head as much as it did. And so I think that, you know, if there were plans for, you know, it looked like at last year's WrestleMania, Rock and Rousey versus Steph and Triple H, and maybe that would have come through. But, you know, as I said, it would have had to, you know, something would have had to be different, probably have to be different with Ronda. Namely, she'd still be the UFC champion. And whether, you know, if I was, and I've said this before, if I was Dana White in UFC, I wouldn't let her work on a WrestleMania, particularly in an announced main event, because that, you know, you're competing with WWE on that stuff. So let's go to our friend Jason in Australia. Jason, welcome to Saturday morning.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce and Travis. First of all, Bruce, I just wanted to say I wrote an email to you for Ask Bruce Mitchell for this week. It's in relation to Brock Lesnar, so I'm hoping if you get the chance, you can have a opportunity to discuss it, because I think
this weekend will be a good time for us to pick up some. We've got Ask Bruce Mitchell at gmail.com for the Bruce Mitchell Auto Show for VIP members. Of course, we do our mailbag questions, and I think this weekend we'll be hitting that. So yeah, I saw your question. It's a good one, and we'll work on that for the weekend for the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show.
All right, thanks for that. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up a point regarding Raw. I mean, like everyone else, I thought it was a tremendous show, but you know, once again, it just shows the power of not having the authority on Raw. I mean, you think about it. Say the authority are booked on Raw, you don't get that backstage segment between Sami Zayn and AJ Styles selling the effects of that match and Shane McMahon coming in and putting them over. Instead, you get a segment with Stephanie bigfooting someone. Think about this. You got the authority on Raw. I guarantee you, the next segment after Gallows and Anderson attack the Usos, it's Triple H smiling at the TV saying, "You see that?" And Stephanie says, "Oh, another great signing, honey." Completely taking away the uniqueness and the mystery behind their signing. And the other thing is, Jason Powell raised a really good point on the VIP after show on Tuesday. He mentioned that even though Kevin Owens lost clean, he still felt very, very relevant as a heel. Once again, it's because the authority aren't there sucking all the heat out of the building in the first 20 minutes. To me, the sun is brighter, the water is clearer, and the air is fresher when the authority are not on TV. And it just makes me think, guys, what could have been with Seth Rollins if he didn't have the authority bigfooting him, taking away all his heat? And Randy Orton, like, limping into WrestleMania 30, how much better his character would have been as a heel if the authority were not sucking the heat away? It's just a prime example on Monday.
Well, we don't know where things are going, but after 2 weeks of this, I very much get the impression it's going to be Shane McMahon's stage for a while. And, you know, and the authority are going to be out of this. I think, you know, we're talking about what would have Triple H done at last year's WrestleMania if he didn't have to put Roman Reigns over or be the WWE champion. I think the match that he'll be in next year will be some sort of goofy stipulation match, but it'll be Triple H versus Shane McMahon. And hopefully, as you said, for a while, this will, you know, they'll keep the authority off. But I don't know that I definitely don't think we've seen the end of that role for them or them on, you know, and clearly them on Raw. So I want to take one second to say, if you listen to this before Saturday morning in our time, Be sure to listen to Jim Valley, his Saturday wrestling show, because what he's got this week, he was at Cauliflower Alley, the big Cauliflower Alley convention for wrestlers and for fans that, you know, it's been going on for 50 years and very much old school, very much a lot of folks. And Lance Russell of Memphis Wrestling, the longtime host of the television show, and Lance Russell in the very top of wrestling broadcasters ever, and is 90 years old and still with it. And Jim Valley did an in-depth interview with him that Lance liked a lot, and I think it's going to be a must-listen. Russell tells great stories. I mean, he worked through a whole bunch of different eras of professional wrestling. And, you know, Jerry Lawler came specifically to Las Vegas to help honor Lance Russell. And, well, he should, because those two go together like peanut butter and jelly. I mean, they were just, they really helped make each other and make each other's careers. So I'm looking forward to listening to Jim's interview with Lance. And we'll see what it is. So I wanted to definitely throw that in there. But, Jason, I'm going to give it back to you as far as what you're talking
about. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, and I just wanted to touch on Shane McMahon and how they get around this. Look, I think this is what they might end up doing. And now, first of all, with stipulations, I mean, let's be honest, complaining about WWE not following through on stipulations is like putting your hand in the cage where a snake is and complaining that, you know, you get bitten. I mean, it's the same company that 4 weeks later, after they supposedly got rid of the authority, they brought him back. But here's what I think what's going to happen. I actually think Vince McMahon is going to come back and not confront's a strong word, but come back and say, you know what? I have to admit, I thought when I gave Raw to Shane, it was going to go off rails. I really did that. I thought I can't indulge him and I've got to teach him a lesson. But I've got to admit, it's actually turned out quite good. And yeah, Vince McMahon put over what Shane has done. And I'd have Vince just say, listen, you have done a great job, and I think, you know, I've gotten good feedback from the board of directors, and I have to say, for the foreseeable future, Shane's going to be in charge of Raw, and have the crowd pop. Then I'd have Stephanie come back, and I'd have her bring up the fact that Vince hasn't honored his stipulation. Like, it's like if Stephanie's the one that's bringing up the point that all of us are complaining about, it sort of makes it less cool to go along with her. Then I have Vince say to Stephanie, look, sometimes when you lose in life, you actually win. And Shane gained the respect, he's gained the admiration, and I believe it's best for business that he continues running Raw, and that's all there is to it. I think the fans would accept it, Stephanie would get pissed off, and then you're off to the races with that storyline. But I think the only way it works is if Vince admits that he had an ulterior motive, he's been proven wrong, but he's going to do what's best for business. I think that's how you get out of it.
Travis, what's your reaction to that scenario?
Yeah, that's a good out. Or, I mean, that's not even an out the way, really, the way he put it. I guess it still is. But have Vince come out and just go, hey, you know, in business, things happen. And you win when you expect to lose, and you lose when you expect to win. And I expected a different outcome. And, hey, I'm fan enough, you know, to take this opportunity to be, you know, magnanimous and, you know, put himself over. You know, who says I don't listen to him?
And have him say, you proved your worth to the family again. You're trying to get over Shane McMahon for whatever reason. You proved your worth to the family again. You're back in the will. Because I just thought that was like as dumb and unrealistic as you could get. And, you know, and then, you know, for however long he's going to play this role, have him do it. Yeah, I like what you came up with, Jason. I think that would clear the deck and then just move on with a competent, even-handed general manager and a guy who can play the character even if he can't do it in real life. I mean, he can definitely play the character and do with it. Let me ask you guys, where are you in the second week of not a bad guy, not a good guy, the guy stuff?
I'm sick of hearing it.
It's the second week? Come on, second week. Sick of it already?
No, I'm already just sick of hearing that line specifically. Like, all right, it's just so canned and so, like, a line.
Jason?
Look, it's a clever line the first time you hear it, but by the fourth time you hear it in the space of 2 weeks, you're like, okay, we get the point. It's almost like he's too proud to say it. Like, oh, look at this great line I've come up with. I've got to run with it. Okay, we get the point. You know, it's already put me off, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's bad news, because I think they thought they finally had something they could hang his promo hat on, and I think we're going to hear it. If you're tired of it in the second week, that's not a good sign. And I'm not saying you're wrong, because I am kind of tired of it too. But I think that they're looking at that, and the badass who defends the WWE Championship and doesn't care what people think, and it's cool because of that, and blah blah blah. I mean, that's gonna be another remaking that may not pan out anywhere near the way they hope it might, but
Bruce and Travis, you know, just talking about like payback, you know, I've always thought like from a business point of view, trying to get as many subscribers as possible following WrestleMania, you know, to me, like these pay-per-views like Payback and Battleground, they have no equity or substance behind them. Like, I thought the best pay-per-view you would run after WrestleMania would be, say, Money in the Bank. Because of all the pay-per-views that give an impression that there's a new beginning, a new challenger, a new contender to the title, Money in the Bank is a pay-per-view that will help continue on the momentum from WrestleMania and almost signify like the start of a new beginning. You know, and I've also thought, Bruce and Travis, to get your opinion on this, I think the WWE have done a really good job like building up certain cities that have a certain aura to them when there's wrestling in town. Like the UK, countries like the UK, Canada, Chicago, New York. Why not brand pay-per-views around those particular like countries or cities? Like, for example, you know, I believe England deserve a pay-per-view once a year, just sort of like Manchester Mayhem or something like that. Or even if you want to run New York, just call it WWE MSG. You know, that to me sells more than, say, Battleground or Payback. I mean, what's your opinion about that, utilizing the equity you've built with these cities and how exciting fans feel when they know an event's going to be there?
I mean, it's a point that they're, you know, going to Madison Square Garden even in 2016, and definitely going to England, there's a certain amount of, there's something to that's sellable. The only thing I would say about why I don't think they'll ever really do that way, or do it like, you know, once a year they go to Manchester and once a year they go to New York City and Madison Square Garden. They have that, you know, at that point in the calendar, you have that branded pay-per-view. Is it does take away a little bit of what they like to do, which is come into a city. And they'd love to do this for WrestleMania. They got a lot of, you know, and particularly after this year, they've got a lot of leverage on these big cities to get breaks, to get tax breaks and all kinds of breaks given into it. But that it would take away some of that negotiating leverage if, say, Madison Square Garden knew they were coming every year, and I'm just making this up, in August, then they would know that they're kind of committed to that, and you know, they can't just go somewhere else. Having said that, I think we're going to see SummerSlam at the Barclays Center, and yeah. I don't think it's going to be official like that. Go ahead, Travis. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, now they can't go somewhere else. They don't even do TV at MSG. They do house shows.
Yeah.
When they go once a year. It's not even TV.
Well, I mean, Madison Square Garden is very expensive for them to run.
No, I know.
Yeah.
That's why they stopped running.
Yeah.
And now that the Barclays Center is there, it's like, well, he's still got that, you know, cachet of being in, you know, Brooklyn.
Well, I mean, that would work the same way as what Jason is saying, which is you come to the Barclays Center. You know, SummerSlam is always at the Barclays Center. Maybe you could. I don't think they'll ever announce it quite that way. Yeah.
Because I don't know if they could do that. MSG, I mean, they might be like, hey, you can't just use us in your advertising or your branding of a thing. I think you'd say take over new what was the example name? Payback New York, Payback Manhattan. But I doubt you could actually say Payback MSG. You could say Payback Brooklyn, like they've done with the takeover in the city.
But we really didn't talk about going to
brand the building or the city or the locale.
We really didn't talk about going to England, but you know, obviously England is a great market for professional wrestling independently, and it gets a lot of attention, at least it gets a lot of attention now, and wrestling fans in England show up for Major League Wrestling like WWE. I have been surprised they haven't had pay-per-views over there, but I think it must be, you know, it's more complicated to go to another country to run pay-per-views, and a lot, you know, the independent contractors that they use, they don't only aren't only from, you know, professional wrestling, and so I wonder about that, and kind of it might be more of a headache for them, but I think it's inevitable they're going to do it, because I mean, you're going to have this, particularly the first time, it's going to be big money, and you're going to have, you know, you're going to have the audience that we saw at WrestleMania, and the audience that I wrote about, the audience that we saw at Raw, wrote about this week, and we're going to, you know, you'll see that, you know, exponentially, the first time they pull that, and you know, they're gonna be able to charge a lot for the tickets and get it. So that's, it's an idea. Jason.
Well, no, I mean, I guess the reason why I brought that up, Bruce and Travis, is that, you know, you're looking at the months of the year where there might be a slow turn, like say, you know, that the Mays or the Junes or the Octobers. You know, you don't want to keep looking forward to say, oh, well, we've got Royal Rumble coming up, or we've got SummerSlam. Like, you want to fill in those gaps. And you know, for argument's sake, you know, I know in 97 they did Canadian Stampede in July, a good lead into SummerSlam 97. You know, why not bring back Canadian Stampede? I'm just thinking of ways, because I think the major selling point for the network is those once-a-pay-per-views. Like, I still think that they're the main reason why you get the network, and everything else is a value add-on.
Absolutely. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And it's just finding those ways to have that unique selling point, because I think that they've got to get away from people just thinking that it's just Royal Rumble, WrestleMania and SummerSlam as the main pay-per-views. You need that hook. And I know, as someone from Australia, that if there's an event in MSG, I just know automatically, okay, this is important. If there's something in Canada, okay, I've got to watch this. If it's in the UK, if it's in Chicago, if it's in those really strong markets, I know for a fact that they're going to be quality events just by the crowd and the atmosphere. So why not try and capitalize on that, you know, in those off months, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I guess just one more point.
Okay.
Now, so I was just going to say just one more point, and then I'll leave it at that. I was just thinking, like, the way WWE present their wrestling in the ring, you know, a lot of people have been complaining about that there's a lot of high spots that get kicked out of and finishes get kicked out of, and I agree with that. But, you know, what I'd like to see, and I think they need to do this for 3 hours, is, like, retrain the audience that, you know, wrestlers can get pinned at any particular time with a few moves. Like, I'd like to actually see the audience and come back and actually pin someone with that hanging DDT that he uses off the second rope, just to say that, okay, he can actually win a match with this. You know, like, I've never seen Dolph Ziggler pin anyone with the Famouser. Or Kevin Owens, he hits that frog splash. He hasn't pinned anyone yet. I think they need to retrain the audience that these big high moves can have an impact, and it's not just a finisher. There's certain finishers they can go to. Because if we know at any particular time Owens can win with that frog splash, we're going to be more invested in that fall, if you know what I mean. I think they've got to retrain the audience, because too many of us are just waiting for that pop-up powerbomb or the AA, or, you know, the zigzag. That's just what I think. You know, try and make it more exciting.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, and we've talked about having what Stan Hansen called at the WWE Hall of Fame this year, carpenters, to have some of those wrestlers to have enhancement matches where, you know, someone that's a good worker, but you know probably is going to lose, is wrestling Kevin Owens, and Owens hits that frog splash and he wins. And then also mix in there that when he has a match with a Cesaro type or you know, someone that's an equal of his or better, that every once in a while he does hit that what Jason said and wins the match. I mean, there's certain moves that look like they should pin you that never seem to do that, and I agree with you. I think they'd be better off kind of mixing that in. I know that they're kind of working on their style in a lot of ways. I don't know that they're still enamored of the WWE style where everyone kind of wrestles the same way. I'm hoping that with the Cruiserweight tournament, with NXT doing what it's doing, with Nakamura in the mix, that we start to see in the main roster some different styles, because that guys working together with different styles sometimes leads to some things that aren't that pretty, but many times pushes both performers to a better level and makes for a more interesting match and not so bland of a product. You know, there's nobody that's really terrible in the ring in WWE, but there's a whole lot of guys that are right at the same level and they don't stand out, and that's one of, you know, the booking's a problem with that, and then just the the sameness of it, particularly after, as you said, Jason, after 3 hours, that's that might help. That might do something with it. Travis, you have any thing on this?
No, not particularly. I think you summed that up well.
Jason, appreciate it. Appreciate the call, and lots of interesting stuff with that. And you know, that's we'll work on, you know, we'll see where they go with some of this. I suspect that as I said, Shane McMahon, with Shane McMahon going to Europe, and I guess we're going to see him for a little while. Although Travis, I wouldn't be shocked if like he was on TV next week, and then the Authority walked out and fired him, and we're back to, you know, we're back to square one again, and we're back to what things are. I think they're, you know, I think, you know, Vince McMahon is in a and I can sort of understand it. Consistency in storylines and all that. It doesn't really matter. Look what I pulled out of my hat with Shane and Undertaker, and it really worked. And you know, I'm just going to react to ratings and keep things moving and keep things popping and see if it works. And you know, it's not going to. I mean, I think that, you know, we saw the rating go back down to you know, pre-WrestleMania, and we're past NFL football, we're past NCAA finals. We're past just about everything, and I don't know that was a great rating, but then maybe social media did a whole lot of talking about it, you know, that impresses ESPN and got them a lot of coverage. So, you know, just kind of, it's kind of amazing.
90 seconds.
Yeah. I don't have much to add. But...
Yeah. So, how did you rate Raw? I mean, what did you think? I mean, lots of people really loved
this
it.
This week, Monday was better, I thought, by a decent amount than the night after Mania.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it still dragged in places.
60 seconds.
It's still going to drag in places, but I thought it dragged in places. And I, you know, again, something that doesn't make sense, but people reacted to well, was Bray Wyatt and Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns.
Beating up the League of Nations.
Yeah. It's like, can we get some, and I'm still just, you know, if they react to it, there's your foundation. You know, give us a reason. What the hell's going on with Bray Wyatt?
Yeah. I had this whole scenario built up that could culminate at SummerSlam, that had them on a May, June, July, like a 3 month, you know, 2 or 3 month, a 3 month journey to like actually becoming, you know, friends. I mean, I say that begrudgingly,
but
a relationship with me. But it's like, oh, okay, and they come through their ups and downs, and they explained why they're pals now, and then in that fourth month or so before SummerSlam, Reigns turns on Bray. And I forget my reasoning. Maybe Reigns said, because he cost him a bunch of times. Like, you thought I was going to, like, forget that. But you built Bray up to be, like, this redeemed, you know, babyface that it's like, you know, oh, come on. I had it really mapped out a day or two ago. I should have, like, recorded a small, you know, to my phone or something, or written it to him. But it was something like that.
Yeah, you know, I think that Bray does. I mean, Bray clearly, you know, particularly since he hasn't done anything nefarious in a way that makes you think he's not just a superstar on Monday Night Raw that can go and, you know, ring the bell at Wall Street. I think that, you know, people like him, and then you know, the cell phone gimmick is popular, and that's kind of a lot of the act. So it'd be, you know, it still would just be good if he's. He has a great delivery if they gave him something worth delivering in the ring and gave him a little bit more with that. But yeah, I thought it was pretty funny that you know, that Bray actually seemed to help Roman Reigns a little bit in the popularity part, particularly since one's, you know, one's, I guess, the cool heel, and the other's the not cool good guy. No, not cool. The guy, I should say. Appreciate everybody listening today. Don't forget, again, I'm interested, Lance Russell, one of the all-time greats. If there's a pantheon of wrestling announcers that's just three people big or one person big, it's Lance Russell. And Jim Valley, really, Lance Russell was excited after the interview, and I know Jim's excited about it. So 11:30, is it 11 o'clock? 11:30 on Saturday, but also, you know, clearly you can download it and listen to that and all the PW Torch livecast. Bruce Mitchell Audio Show will be back this weekend with editor-publisher Wade Keller. And Travis will be talking. I'm glad you enjoyed The Fix. That was I've been recommending that book to folks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really, really fun. But tell them how they could hear Bruce Mitchell and all that.
pwtorch.com/govip. And there's all, you know, a page specifically set up to make it easy for you to become a VIP member, and you get a ton of content, including Wade Keller's Daily Audio, The Fix with Todd Martin, and just Torch Talks from the past and from today, a ton of content to look at and to read and to go for a very reasonable price. So if you're a listener to this show and you like it, give that a shot. Travis, appreciate the reminder. Appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate the callers on the PW Torch livecast.